We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 333. We got threes on the board, just like Gary Sanchez and Gleyber Torres' home run totals every game against the Yankees. I mean, against the Orioles.
It's becoming ridiculous, the amount of t-shirts that we've given away against these stupid Baltimore Orioles, because Gleyber Torres is just hitting home runs every single time he's at bat. Is atrocious. I mean, it's hit a pretty unbelievable number. He's got, what, 12 now in the season, and 10 of them are against the Baltimore Orioles. That's just insanity. I don't know why they continue. Gary Thorne is losing his mind.
Yeah, he is. Gleyber Torres is bankrupting Bronx Pinstripes and slowly killing Gary Thorne.
Which I'm fine with the Gary Thorne thing, because I can't stand him. He's annoying. And every time I listen to an Orioles broadcast and hear him say Gary Sanchez, it drives me insane. So I got no problem with him going away.
I think that's an unpopular opinion amongst Yankee fans. I think they have a lot of respect for Gary Thorne.
That's fine. Do you know why? I usually don't listen to other people's opinions when I make mine.
Gary Thorne has some of the best Yankees home run calls in recent memory. He's done some playoff games. He did playoff games in the 90s.
Yes.
For TV and radio. And obviously the Yankees played in the playoffs every year, went deep in the playoffs every year. And he had some really epic calls, specifically the Mattingly one in 95. I'll hold on to the roof. That was a great one. He had a couple other ones in that 95 ALDS. And then also the Scott Brosius one from the 2001 World Series was very good. I tweeted both of those clips out tonight. So if you guys want to go back and check those, like, they were honestly like chill inducing home run calls.
I just don't like the way he says Sanchez. It makes me think of a dirty Sanchez every time. Makes me think of dirty Sanchez. That's what I hear when he says.
Even though Gary has the little accent on the A in his name,
that has I don't.
I mean, technically, I think that's the pronunciation of it.
I don't think you're one to talk about how to pronounce anything personally.
I am not a professional TV broadcaster.
Correct.
Amateur podcaster.
So answer me this. Why does every single other person on the face of this planet not say Sanchez?
Because Sanchez is the common and more easy thing. And also Gary Sanchez says his name is Gary Sanchez.
Well, there you go. There you go. How about we pronounce it like the guy wants it?
But we've heard players change. We've seen players say their name differently at different
times.
It's
just Gary Thorne. It's just Gary Thorne. He's the only one who does it.
Yeah.
That's it. One guy.
Yeah.
That's it.
These games against the Orioles are going for the sweep tomorrow. You got to get that sweep. Your prediction is still up and alive. I don't know if they're going to get there 17-2, but for the time being, it's still alive. Didn't look like it was going to be there after Monday.
I mean, honestly, I have to judge anybody who thinks it's not. I don't know how you could possibly walk in. I said this before. Tweet me if you believe before the game starts that the Yankees should lose to the Orioles on any given day. On that day, when you see the lineup and the pitching, it's fine. Just tell me if you think they're going to lose.
I mean, it's not
because there's no reason they should lose.
It's not even the lineup and the pitching. It's you watch them play, and they're a sad, pathetic mess. I mean, they're booting the ball around the field. That left fielder, those two throws on Monday night. What the hell is he doing? How does he not immediately get sent down to the minors after those two throws from left field? I mean, he almost threw it into the dugout.
Because they are the minors. That's the problem. They're not a major league caliber talented team. They're just not. They have guys up that would not normally be up on other teams. And if they had, you know, half the people that they had last year, none of these guys would not be playing right now.
I know the talent is obviously not there, but and so you get crushed by a team. You're giving up home runs. Like, that's a talent issue. But how do you as a left fielder make those throws, and how do you as a catcher have, like, go back for a pop-up? I'm talking about Luke Voit's at bat in the ninth inning on Monday. He goes back for a pop-up, and then the ball just lands near home plate. Like he's never tried to catch a pop-up before.
Like, he didn't even see the ball. Like, he took his eye off. There was a girl in the stands.
Like, there was a gust of wind, like a nor'easter blew through Camden Yards in that split second and pushed the ball like 20 feet back to home plate. I don't know. Those are always tough plays. I was a catcher in high school. The pop-up directly behind you is the toughest play. But
it's not that hard. But at the same time, he wasn't even close to it. There wasn't even an attempt. It's like he was here, and then all of a sudden, the ball drops 15 feet behind him. It was the weirdest thing. What it was, really, it was the baseball gods just smacking that ball away, because it was Luke Voit who hit it, and Luke Voit, the inning before, two innings before, missed that super easy pop-up. So it was just the baseball gods saying, here you go, kid.
Well, when Chris Davis is one of the more competent baseball players in your lineup, you know you're a shitbag team.
Spray charts. They were putting up spray charts for Chris Davis today. How do you even do that? You got to use
that on the. That must have been on the Orioles broadcast.
Yes, yes. I was flipping back and forth.
Yeah.
Just because I like to do that when I'm watching the game sometimes. And spray charts for Chris Davis. And I don't even know how you get to that.
Pull.
What poor. No, there's just nothing there. There's just not very many dots. That's my point.
Seven he went dots.
How many? How long did it go? 50? 50 some? How long were the? Yeah, was
dating
the stretch?
Back to last year, it was like 50 something games that he was shirtless.
There's no spray chart. Like, it's just a couple of people, like a kid threw, you know, a bag of marbles and that's it. It's done.
Analytics so couldn't even pick up what he was doing because there were no analytics.
The percentages were all round numbers.
Right. We're going to get to everything that's happened so far this week. Couple quick updates. So the May 31st event, tickets are no longer on sale, correct?
They are no longer on sale. The t-shirts are ordered. They are shipping tomorrow. They should get there with no issue.
You want to give a little tease on what the shirt is, or you want to leave people to surprise?
We'll leave that one to a surprise. I'm going to email it out, actually. The people that bought the tickets are the ones that deserve to see it first and hear about it first. So I will send you an email. It'll be this week. With just some more details about what's going on and the tickets and the t-shirts and all that stuff. But coming up around the corner, which is going to come up super fast after this event, is June 22nd, which is the Houston game. That's a Saturday 7:00 game. Those tickets are on sale. I think we have, 75, 85 tickets sold, something like that right now. But I definitely expect to get up, you know, probably around 200 or so. That is a 7:00 game. We're working on a different type of pregame for that event. I'm not sure if it's going to happen because we're kind of in talks with some people, but we are trying to secure a parking lot to do like a tailgate. That's kind of the goal. But there's a lot of tape to walk around to get a lot of people and a lot of beer in one area outside of a bar. So we're working on it. We'll see if it happens.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I know you and I have talked about doing that pretty much since the whole idea of the events first started, that a whole tailgate type atmosphere.
The last game I was at, I drank a few beers, and at the end of the game, I apparently didn't stop drinking beers, and I had a whole bunch. This was the last event, actually. I was with my buddy. We were walking back to the train, and I was like, I was going to the lot because it's by the Hudson line. So we went over to the kid that was working, the attendant. And I grilled him and like got the phone number for the people that own it. I got like all the details as much as I could possibly get. Uh-huh. I just kept asking the guy questions and he kept giving me information. So it was good. So that's where we are.
That's how you're a grinder, Scott. You just grind things out.
I find my way into places.
Right. You wiggle your way in. And then if you're in Tampa, in Florida, or anywhere within driving or shouting distance of Florida, and you want to go to the crummy Tropicana Field on July 6th, we're doing an invasion of that stadium, if you want to call it a stadium. Those tickets are also on sale, $69. There's going to be a pregame party. It's going to be sort of the same idea as what we've done in the Bronx the last 2 years, just taking it down to Tampa, St. Pete.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. We got Ferg's, which is across the street, locked in as a place, as the pregame spot. Jared is one of the captains of the BP crew. Tampa is working through that. All the details, I actually think he has a meeting with them tomorrow. But yeah, we have 200 tickets secured down there. A bunch of us are going to be going down. It's going to be a blast. So if you're in the Tampa area or within a driving distance, or you want to get on a plane, go to Tampa for the weekend. That's what we're doing. It's going to be fun. So definitely get those tickets. They're $69, and yeah, lots of good stuff with them, and they're really good seats too. It's the Trop, so we got field level right by the bullpen, which is on the side. If anybody didn't remember, it's on the side of the
that's right behind the Yankees third baseline, right?
We'll be the Yankees bullpen, right?
Yankees bullpen.
Third baseline down the stretch. So we'll be able to chirp with those guys.
Go check out George's Box, too. They just dropped another episode on Wednesday. Keith talked about how he wound up in Brian Cashman's box. That was legitimately Brian Cashman's box. Yeah. Brian Cashman was not just doing rounds. Yeah, he wasn't just doing rounds, you know, doing his duty as Yankees general manager. No, that was his own private suite. That sounded like an awesome atmosphere for to just watch a baseball game in, turn around, all of a sudden Brian Cashman is behind you. You're like, oh, shit. So go check that out. They talked about a bunch of other things as well as the Stadium Eats web series. If you guys have not seen that, it's all over our YouTube page, Facebook page. There's a thread on Twitter. If you just search hashtag Stadium Eats, you can catch up on all the videos. I was on the most recent episode. I thought I was doing a nice thing, Scott, going on JJ's show, and he flips me off. He calls me a scumbag. I mean, just classic JJ being a unclassy person.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of it, you were feeding him, what was it, avocado bites?
Avocado bites, yep. We tried the avocado bites. I was establishing my dominance over him. I was claiming my territory when I double dipped, and then he blames me for getting the flu. It's just, I don't know if I'm going to go on that show again. It's basically what I'm saying.
I mean, I understand the double dipping, you know, blaming you for the flu, though. Kind of makes a little bit of a sense. That is one of those test things. He was right in the sense of this. You are about to get married. And when someone gives you a test, one that is very well known that there's a wrong answer. Like, yeah, there's no wrong answer to this. Oh, there is a wrong answer. There's definitely a wrong answer.
I am firmly on the double dip side.
You like to double dip. You like to bite something.
Everyone likes to double dip. If you are dipping something in a sauce, mm-hmm. you want to double dip that.
So get your own sauce. Put the sauce on your plate.
There was only one sauce. I thought we were friends.
Did you turn it?
A review.
Did you turn the avocado bite?
No, it went right in there.
You went saliva. There was a saliva string.
Yes.
Going into the sauce.
Yes.
You could have turned it.
I could.
You could have turned it and then used the non.
If this is a public,
It was public. It was very public.
No, but if
Yankee Stadium,
if it's a shared communal sort of whatever situation where there's a dipping sauce, of course you're not going to double dip. You're going to take some for yourself. But this, amongst friends, I know JJ, JJ knows me. I got in there, I double dipped. So what? Get over it.
All right. I'm just not letting you near my sauce. I know now you have double dip on your forehead.
Yes.
So nobody's sharing their fries with you.
In addition to blast it out everywhere, that game 4 of the World Series, if the Yankees do indeed make it, I might be preoccupied.
When the Yankees make it and when the game 4 happens, you unfortunately are taking me down with you, and
you
that
can
is
do
bullshit.
Whatever you want.
That is
back.
Bullshit.
You can be in the back with my dad and Frank, and you guys.
I will be watching the game. I will definitely be watching the game. There's no doubt about that.
You can check out the game.
I'm not worried about watching the game. I will be watching that game. Yes.
Yeah. I'm hoping for wherever the Yankees are playing, they're going to be on the road for game 4, and it's going to be rained out. All right. Let's talk about Gleyber Torres. We kind of mentioned it at the top, but 10 of his 12 home runs on the season are against Baltimore. He's basically on a 1-for-1 home run pace against them. He's played 11 games. He's hit 10 home runs. 5 of his 6 career multi-home run games are against Baltimore. It's unbelievable. It's laughable. When he hit that second one to right field tonight, I just laughed. I immediately started laughing. It didn't look like a home run off the bat, but I knew it was going to be a home run because when he hits the ball against the Orioles, it goes for a home run.
I mean, when you get the ball up in the air in that place, it's a pretty good shot, you know, to get out. It's the ball just flies there. But I mean, I can't believe that. And in his fourth at bat, I think it was his fourth at bat, the last one, he had a ball, a fastball down the gut, and he put a big swing on it.
Once he hit the two, he was up there swinging for the fences the next.
But he just barely missed this ball too. So he was super close to connecting with that third home run.
I think Gary Thorne would have jumped out of the booth.
You know, it would have been an unbelievable sight to at least listen to what the call would have been and hear how much drama came out of Gary Thorne's mouth. I would have liked it. Would have given me a little bit of payback for the hearing Sanchez a billion times. But look, man, Gleyber's locked in right now, and we see when that kid's locked in. He did this last year, pretty close to the same time. He was super locked in. So now we see this guy as this as this type of guy, not the 10 home runs in 11 games guy, but the guy who hits with, you know, a bit of power now, the unexpected power to him, but he can hit for average. He just does a lot of really good things offensively. We just got to see him continue, because we both believe that last year the second half was more him not over that hip injury, kind of lingering. So I'm interested to see him, you know, I'm knocking on wood, stay healthy and finish this year strong.
Are you at all concerned that if you take out the Baltimore games, Glaber's not actually having a good season?
No, because we've played the Baltimore Orioles so many times already. You know, it's 11 games.
I was joking about that on Twitter tonight and people took me seriously.
I mean, when you look at the numbers, when you look at the splits between the non-Baltimore teams and the team from Baltimore,
well, when you've played,
they're pretty dramatic.
When you've played 11 of your whatever it is, 50-something games against the team, yeah, that's going to happen. But his numbers are ridiculous. Sanchez's numbers are equally, if not actually more ridiculous, because he's hit, I believe, is it 8 home runs against them in fewer games, because he was hurt for some of those games. And right. In Camden Yards, he's... I think if Gary Sanchez played for the Orioles in Camden Yards, he might hit 90 home runs a year.
He hits a lot of home runs there. And I'm just so happy.
He can hit a pop-up to left field and the thing is gone.
I'm just very happy that they're in our division and we play them 19 times. You know, like
it's a real gift.
Those two losses at Yankee Stadium are bullshit. They really are.
Two losses with the healthy lineup.
I
also
know
that's concerning as well. Stanton was in that lineup, and Duhar was in that lineup. Judge was in that lineup.
They're just bullshit. Troy
Tulowitzki was in that lineup.
We're never going to see Troy Tulowitzki ever again our lives. I don't think anywhere. I think it's it.
Yeah, he'll surface somewhere next year in spring training with a team.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure he'll come back. He'll try to come back at least this year.
Yeah. Hap was terrible in Monday's start, and he's faced the Orioles. Let's talk about Hap right now. So he's faced the Orioles 4 times.
He's the opposite of Gary Sanchez and the opposite of Gleyber Torres. I don't know what's happening with him.
He is putting himself into the Orioles pitcher's shoes when he's facing the Orioles. It doesn't make any sense. So 4 starts in 2 months against one single team is a lot. It's not an excuse, but it is a lot. So 4 starts against the Orioles, 17.1 innings pitched, 24 hits, 15 earned runs. That's a 7.79 ERA. It's just god-awful. Against all other opponents, 6 starts, 35 innings, 31 hits, 15 earned runs, 3.86 ERA. How do these splits make any sense?
So here's what I'm just kind of making sense of this in my head, right? Like you said, they've seen him 4 times, 4 starts. So whether it's... Yes, it's a major league team, not major league talent, but they have some guys on there that can hit the ball out. When you see a guy that throws a fastball predominantly and then struggles, because he's struggled the entire beginning of the season so far to locate that fastball, and you know, for whatever reason, it just hasn't been an effective pitch, and he's a fastball guy, you know, you're going to get hit around if you're the same team facing that pitcher. Because it's all you're doing is looking for a fastball now in a specific zone, and if you get it, you're putting a good swing on it. And all of these guys can hit fastballs, so you know, I think it's escalated more with him because the pitch that is so that's been so good his entire career,
his four seam
so
fastball.
Bad right now is the four seam fastball, and that's a hittable pitch when it's bad.
He has thrown that pitch close to 60%. Of his career. That's been his bread and butter pitch. And I was reading something, an article on Hap from the offseason talking about his sneaky fastball and that it doesn't light up the radar gun. It's not 98, 99 miles an hour. It's 92 miles an hour, but it actually plays much faster. It's a high spin rate fastball.
He hits 94, 95. He's definitely more than 92.
Sure, but he's not a guy that you look and see him blazing the radar gun and say, oh, he's a dominant fastball pitcher. But he pitches like one because it plays up. It plays better, plays quicker, plays faster than it really is on the radar gun. He's not lost velocity. As far as I know, from checking earlier in the season, he's not lost spin rate. Yes, he's missing location some, but it's just being hit. 701 slugging percentage against his four-seam fastball. 10 of his 13 home runs allowed are against his four-seam fastball. He's got a 2.2 home run per nine rate. He's never had higher than a 1.5 in his entire career.
And the majority of them are coming early in the game, too.
Yeah.
He's trying to get out ahead. He's not
getting deep in games.
No, but it's happening in the first, second inning. I don't have the number in front of me, but just by watching the games all this year, he's got a ton of first inning home runs allowed. But so when you're missing with the fastball like that, and you're trying to get out in front, and you're trying to establish it, like these guys are now just looking for, you know, a fastball over the plate in whatever zone that they're comfortable in. They're looking for a specific pitch, I think. And because he can't throw it for a strike, they're spitting on it, and they know that. So they're just waiting for him to come over the plate or come into their zone. And you don't need to do anything crazy when you're going against a guy when he has the best pitch as a four-seam fastball and he can't locate that thing. You just sit there and wait for your pitch. And I think that's what's happening. They don't have to get cute with him. They could pretty much spit on everything else.
And I think this is not a case of, they now know what's coming with Hap. They've known what's coming with Hap for his entire career.
Yeah, no, there's something going on with his mechanics. You can tell. So one of the things that, you know, people were trying to compare this to Sonny Gray. And while you're looking at performance wise, you know, it's not that dissimilar. But the problem was with Sonny was the fact that he would never took ownership for his struggles. He never would come out and say, yeah, I'm struggling. I got to fix it. You know, having just a little bit of humbleness behind your words and talking and acting like you have some accountability in your actions. Hap's the opposite. Hap's the complete opposite. When you listen to him talk after the games, he's frustrated. You can see it and you can hear it. It's all written all over him. He's frustrated with the way he's pitching. He doesn't know why the fastball is not as effective as it was. So I don't know. For whatever reason, that just sits better with me. I know it's not helping the performance by any means, but yeah. I think he's going to figure it out at some point. I think it's some kind of a mechanical change.
Well, they have to stick with him. This is not a situation where they can pull him from the rotation anytime soon because there's no one else. And we got some news after today's game that Sabathia might be missing a start because of a knee. His knee is barking. But with Hap, his strikeout is – that's a term my dad always says when he's got pain, like my back is barking or my knee is barking. But his K rate is down 8% from last year as well, and it's the third lowest of his career for any season so far. Do you remember the Boston game, how we talked about how he made adjustments in the middle of that game and he was throwing more two-seamers? And he had a really good game, and then he went on a little run where he had a string of good starts. So I'm wondering if this is he's figuring it out. He's got to figure out how to pitch differently than just his four-seam fastball.
Well, yeah. I mean, if your four-seam fastball is not there and you're not able to locate it or it's coming out flat, you have to figure something out. I know he's been throwing more sinkers.
He's throwing more sinkers, two-seam fastballs.
Trying to work that in.
It's been okay. It hasn't been a great pitch for him.
But I mean, at the same time, he's got to work on the mix of the pitches, and just try to throw some of these, you know, more deceptive pitches a little bit more often. But look, the bottom line is he's got to locate that fastball. It's not going to go away. He's not going to reinvent himself in the middle of the season. What he needs to do is fix the problem on why he cannot locate that fastball or why it's just not working as his most effective pitch anymore, because he's done this for his entire career. So it just leads me to believe that something mechanically is off. And I think that's fixable. I think you could fix that. And I know what, just by listening to him and knowing, you know, what a consummate pro the guy is and has been his entire career, I think he's going to figure it out at some point. I don't have his answers, but I think he will find them.
A lot of Yankees fans are not trusting that Hap is going to figure this thing out.
I mean, it doesn't seem to me like it's an age thing, and that's pretty much the concern for everybody, right? He's a 36, 37-year-old guy that they signed for a 2-year deal, the third-year option, $17 million a year, and everybody's looking at Corbin. I know everybody's like, oh, look at Corbin, what he's doing in the National League. Fine. The Yankees decided not to go after that because he got a stupid amount of money. I still don't blame them for that. But Hap's been a guy that's been good for pretty much his entire career, and showed last year that really age has not affected him one bit. So, and we're seeing now, you know, the velocity is not down. the spin rate, the last time we checked when Rohan was looking into him as well, not really affected much.
Right.
So, yeah,
but wouldn't that almost,
that's got to be mechanical.
Wouldn't that almost make it more concerning?
Well, no, because I think that's just points to the mechanics. I think there's something going on with the way, whether it's a, you know, the arm slot or I don't know. I'd be guessing at this point, but I think there's probably something mechanical. Mm-hmm. And they gotta find it and fix it.
The bizarre thing is he's getting crushed most by Baltimore, who's a terrible team, and he pitched okay against some teams like Boston, Seattle, who when they faced him was a really good hitting team, Minnesota, who's been one of the best hitting teams in baseball. So he's done well against those opponents and then struggled against Baltimore.
Yeah. Well, again, if you're seeing a team four times and you're not,
but it's not like they didn't hit him the first time or the second time. They've hit him every single time.
Right. I mean, I get it. He's look, when you see him the first time, sometimes he's still not great. The numbers aren't awesome. He's almost at a 4 ERA, you know, when you're seeing the on his six other starts.
Tell you what, I'd take a 3.86 ERA overall for him right now.
Yeah, I mean, it would be great. But that's the thing. Like, when you start seeing more teams, a team more consistently, then you still can't locate your fastball. Not good things are going to happen.
And I believe his quote after the game on Monday was that the Yankees won despite him. And that's true. Yeah. They came back. Hicks got the sac fly to tie it. And then Gary Sanchez, 3-run go-ahead home run. And it was a great comeback. It was another great comeback. And a comeback that you're watching that game and they're chipping away late. And the entire time I'm saying they're going to come back. They're going to win this game. It's just a matter of time that this Baltimore bullpen melts down and the Yankees take this game by the balls.
Oh no, this was a tremendous Twitter game for me. I called the comeback. I called the 10-run spot. I said everything that was going to happen. I called it, you know, in like the sixth inning. You just said, I just said, I'm waiting for might've been the fifth or fourth inning even. I was just like, look, I just can't wait till the Yankees throw up a 10 spot and send the crowd home happy, because that's what they were going to do.
Send the crowd at a visiting stadium home happy.
Yeah. I think that part of the tweet got underappreciated, to tell you the truth. But it was just one of those games you felt like if the bullpen can come in and do their job and settle down the game, and they did, then the Yankees bats were going to hit no matter what. So if you can keep the Orioles, you know, at six runs, seven runs, whatever it may be, then you're in a good position to win the game, I think. Because I believe every single game they play at the Orioles that they're going to hit. Like, the only way the Yankees are going to lose a game is if they have a meltdown on the pitching side.
And the game ended Monday with the Gary Sanchez 3-run home run in the ninth inning. And then on Tuesday, the game ended with the Gary Sanchez home run in the first inning.
Yeah, like
you knew exactly the way that game was going as soon as Gary, in the first inning on Tuesday, hit that ball. Like, okay,
it was five minutes into the game.
Yeah,
five minutes into the game. I was saying goodnight to my son and going down to watch the game. And before I even got to turn it on, it was 3-0. It was a fast 3 runs.
And the route was on from there. They just did not stop. They just pummeled the ball all night. And Herman was not great. I think it was his, by game score, Baseball Reference has game score, his third worst start of the season so far. They didn't extend him. They pulled him after five innings after he gave up the 3-run home run. He didn't help himself out with a throwing error. But I think they took that opportunity with a blowout going on. Let's not push him an extra inning. Let's get him out early, because then after what you saw, we talked about this last episode, they're going to start to manage his innings. Because I saw some articles written today on Wednesday about the Yankees' plans with Herman going forward and how they're going to limit his innings this summer.
Well, yeah, it was a perfect opportunity to do it too. When you're in a game like that, you know, you can take advantage of him and the fact that you have a bullpen that can pretty much lock it down. But, you know, if the Yankees' bats are going up and smacking the ball like they are against the pitching staff of the Baltimore Orioles, and they have nobody else in their pen that can do anything really effective against you, that Klein kid had some maybe good stuff. I don't even know.
No.
They're bad, man. Like, how are they going to possibly stop the offense? We've seen these pitchers now. Nobody's good.
No.
Andrew Cashman would have to get just, you know, a Fountain of Youth game.
He's going to get traded, right? He's got to get traded. Mancini's got to get traded.
I don't know if Mancini will get traded, but
what are they waiting for? The rebuild in 2029? Like, what's going on?
They got to sell some tickets. He's like the guy now.
I don't think Trey Mancini is putting asses in seats, but he could get you a prospect.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the hell they're doing. According to their beat writers, they're not trading anybody. So they.
Well, what's amazing is that entering last season, they were a contender.
I mean, look at their team is gutted. They had some good ball players on that team. Their pitching was always terrible, but they had some good position players.
But they thought they were going to hit their way to maybe a wild card spot last year entering the season.
And Jonathan Schoop forgot to how to hit in the first half of the season.
Yeah.
And that was a big part of what was going on. And then, then the wheels come off that you just get rid of everybody.
So do you care that Domingo Germán is leading the American League with 9 wins?
Oh, yeah. I love it, actually. I do care.
You're a big wins guy? Win-loss record?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wins are important.
9-1. I think. Yes.
Something Jacob deGrom couldn't do. It's a shame.
That's right. He's almost got as many wins as DeGrom's Cy Young season last year.
So this is it. In the bucket, we got this. Cy Young, Domingo Germán.
I think Tyler tweeted out that he's on pace for like 31 wins.
I mean, that's an all-time season right there.
That is. I think 24 is the modern-day record. Like,
people will be talking about wins if he gets to 31.
At what number do wins become important? Or at what number? What's an impressive record?
When I see Domingo Germán, when I see Domingo Germán in May have 9 wins, it's important. I think that's very good. I think that's a number that I look at. I was like, oh, this guy's probably having a pretty good season. You know, the team is.
I mean, he didn't pitch great some on Tuesday.
He didn't pitch terribly. He did what he had to do.
He said he even said after the game, I was not good.
Fine, he can say it all he wants. I love that. I love that. Get your 9th win and tell me you're not good. Something that Sonny Gray couldn't do either.
Yeah, because he was lights out.
This is exactly what I was expecting. When I made that prediction of 20 wins with that scumbag in Cincinnati, that's all you had to do. Just go out there and just throw some innings and let the bats take care of business.
Right.
But he was just I don't even want to talk about it anymore. But yeah, I mean, you don't have to do too much. Just go out there and do your job. And you don't have to be perfect.
I'm being
but
hard
he's been
on,
better than that. He's been better than that. You're not giving him enough credit.
No. I was being hard on him.
These 9 wins have come with some very, very, very good outings.
I was being hard on him on purpose. He has been their best starting pitcher this year, bar none. He was not great on Tuesday, but he has been great the entire season, and he deserves all of those 9 wins. And it's funny, his one loss came against the Royals, and I believe it was like a 6-inning, 1-run performance, and he lost that game. So
there you go. So nobody's talking about that, right? Should have been a win.
And also shout out to David Hale for finishing that game 4 innings. That's an impressive performance because like the Chance Adams thing on Sunday, you finish the game, you save the bullpen. David Hale did the Yankees a great service on Tuesday.
You're getting influenced by Keith a little too much right now. You just did a shout out to David Hale.
Did I really?
Yeah. You said shout out to David Hale.
Is that my first shout out?
Is this his third time back on the Yankees? I don't know. Maybe is it just the second? It feels like the third or fourth. But
I was surprised they didn't send him back packing to the minors today.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he earned something right there with the 4 innings against the Baltimore.
But he's useless to them until the weekend, at least.
No, it's true. I mean, they're not going to. If you have a guy that can throw 4 innings at this point, let's hold on to him for now. You know, let's see what happens because there's things happening now with CC's knee, which also he's been talking about. I'm reading tweets as we're recording this after the game on Tuesday or Wednesday night that he's getting shooting pains. Cole Harvey's talking about shooting pains down the knee is what CC's saying too. So it doesn't sound good.
Of course, with CC, this happens every single year.
Right. Absolutely. But what we're dealing with right now is a team that needs starting pitching, and you know they really can't afford to have another starter down. I mean, who knows? It's next man up. So you know, someone might come up. Chance Adams might all of a sudden turn into the next guy.
Experimented with an opener that didn't work on Sunday. Sabathia looks like he's going to miss at least one start, maybe more starts. And he's been solid. He's been exactly what we expected him to be—a 5-inning pitcher with a couple runs on the board. Today he didn't look good, but again, the offense put up a ton of runs early. It didn't really matter. The game got.
It mattered because he tried to. I mean, they were back within 2 runs. I mean, it was a 7-5 game pretty quick.
way too close. Two-run game in the fifth inning, and if Gardner doesn't throw the guy out at home plate, who knows what happens in that game?
Yeah. No, this was going to be a very – if this was the third loss of the season from the Baltimore, it was really going to piss me off if they had lost this game.
And they had chances late in that game to tack on runs. They had a second and third opportunity, Clint Frazier and Estrada up, and they didn't get anybody in.
Right.
It didn't matter, and I thought it was going to matter because Chad Green comes in the eighth inning. No one understood this bullpen decision. Canely pitches the sixth. Okay, check. Yep, understand. Ottavino pitches the seventh. Okay, yep, I got that. Wait, hold on. Who's that? Chad Green? You're warming up Chad Green? What is going on, Aaron Boone?
He's trying to put him back in his old role. Maybe he'll hit. He'll remember what it's like to pitch in the eighth inning. Well, it turns out that Britton just needed a day off.
Okay,
and he's fine. So we're reading tweets. We're trying to just listen to the beat guys after the game too, so we don't miss anything. But Boone said that he was a little beat up. They asked Britton. He said he's fine. Sounds like he just has been throwing a lot of innings lately and just needed a night. That's what it sounds like. And he's available tomorrow.
It's 2 days off in a row for Britton.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So they're just trying to give him. We're trying to give him that extra day.
So I understand that, and I kind of piece it together as Chad Green was pitching and he drills the first guy
right in the chest.
Here we go.
That's 96, 97 in the like to the chest.
But come on, what are you thinking when he drills that guy? Meltdown coming, right?
Yeah, but he didn't. He figured it out.
Just because
that's a good sign. That's a good sign that he figured that out.
Just because it worked doesn't make it right. I know that Britton was not available. I understand that. But I still don't think Chad Green is the guy to go to there. There's guys ahead of him on the depth chart. Holder is actually ahead of Chad Green on the depth chart right now.
I mean, everybody's ahead of him on the depth chart right now.
Not Cortez. Wait. Or Nestor Cortez was optioned. So not David Hale.
The thing is I see this as a very positive thing, okay? Because now we got Chad Green.
This is yin and yang. You see it as positive, I see it as negative.
Well, he was in a two-run situation. This game was tighter than it ever needed to be. The Orioles definitely felt like they were going to do something. You could tell that they were trying to steal this game. Because that's where the position they were in is they were about to steal a game that they had no business even being in. And you could tell that they kind of knew that. And when the ball kept flying out against CeCe, they definitely gave them some momentum and gave them the feeling that they were in this game and they were, you know, trying to nab it from them. And when you hit a guy to you get an out, then you hit a guy and you know, tying runs at the plate, feeling good. Chad Green got out of that inning, got out of that situation in the eighth inning in a two-run game with a tying run up. That's a positive thing.
It could work as a real positive.
I'm hoping it helps his head.
That's a huge spot for him, and he has got to be confident after that performance. So maybe this can be something that helps him turn around his season. I don't know. All I know is I was uneasy watching that inning.
I mean, I think every single one of us were uneasy watching that inning. I was definitely uneasy. Especially after he hits the guy, you're waiting for the next bad thing to happen, because that's been the course of action basically this entire year. When Chad Green starts going bad, it's been a snowball, and he stopped it this time. So I'm very happy about that, because he's a big piece of this bullpen. If he can get back right, that's a huge weapon that they have still. You know, I don't care if people don't trust him this year, or they look at Chad Green in 2019 and they're like, nah, this ain't the same guy. This is the guy that that we cannot, you know, depend on. Look, Holder started off terrible too, and he's definitely rebounded and become, you know, a much more reliable piece of that bullpen now for Boone to use. So I do think that Green can use it. I mean, he's got the stuff. It's not like the, you know, much of it's diminished. He got his little mechanical tweaks or whatever he did in Scranton.
But he just looked like lost soul though after that performance on Sunday when he drills the guy in the forehead after giving up two home runs, and then he first batter hits a guy.
Drills the guy in the forehead. That sounds so bad.
Is what he did.
Yeah, I know. It was a glancing blow, but it did hit him in the forehead.
Glancing blow. Okay. Still a 96 mile an hour fastball.
Good thing they wear helmets. Good thing they wear helmets.
I don't think if he wasn't wearing a helmet, he would have said it's a glancing blow. But he just looked like a lost pitcher. And then when he hits the guy in the first batter, I thought he's still a lost pitcher. And thankfully, he turned it around.
Look, it could have been terrible tonight, and we've all been and looked at Boone, and we're like, "What in God's name are you doing?" But now we can look at this and say, "Hey, he's trying to show confidence in the kid, trying to get his morale back up against the lowly Baltimore Orioles."
There's certain ways to get morale up, and a 2-run game in the 8th inning is not time for morale. Time to win.
The other side of that is the time to do it is against the Baltimore Orioles. Yeah, it's a 2-run game, but they're still the Baltimore Orioles. If there's
a team to do it against, it's the Baltimore Orioles, but still a 2-run game is not something.
And guess what? If they tie the game up, you know, Gary Sanchez or Glaber will hit a home run.
Going deep late in that
Someone's
game.
Going deep. So this game wasn't going to get away. The bats would not have let it happen.
We also, I think, learned, and we've been learning this over the last couple of weeks, that Tyler Wade has been Wally Pipped from a job he never even had by Taro Estrada. Who hit another home run today, his third of the season. He's 12 for 38 on the season. That's a .316 batting average in a backup role.
Why do we talk about batting average in convenient times when it doesn't matter to anybody? I don't get it. I mean, you can say it to me because I like it, but I don't understand this.
Because
I hear it on the broadcast all of a sudden too, and like when people who don't like it use it in convenient times. Okay, either so use it or
would
don't.
You, would you like
either
me to use get, it or don't. Would you like me to get Taro Estrada's OPS plus?
I mean, I'm just saying there are so many people now that are all about these advanced metrics, but yet when there's a good batting average or a good win loss record, they're like, oh yeah, win loss record is this, batting average is this. I'm like, okay, great. So now we're using it again?
He's got a 938 OPS and I'm not going to touch my computer because the thing is about to melt, so I don't want to crash Skype.
It's okay.
Right
no
now.
One will understand what you're talking about anyway. They understand when you say 316 batting average. You're like, oh, that's pretty good.
I'm using it to make a point that he is in the role that Tyler Wade thought he had the last two seasons and didn't even sniff a 200 batting average. So we're seeing a guy who's getting sporadic playing time. He gets a spot start today. He comes off the bench on Sunday in a pinch hitting opportunity because Urshela fouls a ball off his nuts and he gets a big bases clearing double. Like he's coming through in key opportunities. So he doesn't need to hit .316, but like we said with Tyler Wade, you just need to be some semblance of a major league hitter, which Tyler Wade was not. And Taro Estrada is.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's no doubt about it. If you can get all of the things that Wade can do and then you also add a bat to it, I mean, that's a pretty nice little package there. So the fact that he's hitting and he can play good defense, and we saw him play the outfield as well, even though he hadn't played it since.
He's probably not as good of an outfielder as Tyler Wade, but who cares?
He's not as good of a fielder as Tyler Wade. Tyler Wade's a better fielder all around.
Estrada looked pretty good at second base tonight. He made a couple nice plays.
That's fine. He's a good. I don't think he's a bad fielder, but Tyler Wade is probably one of the best, if not the best, shortstop in the system.
If it weren't for Tyler Wade's speed and his defense, he would not still be in the Yankees organization getting chances.
No, but that's the reason he's there because that's his. Those are his weapons.
That's his.
That's his game.
Milieu.
That's his. You know, when you're leaning on a guy like Tyler Wade, you are looking for a guy at the back of your bench who can play good defense and can run the bases. That's it. That's what you're looking for.
So
I've talked about this. Like I like having my 25th man. I like him being a guy that can play multiple positions and run the bases. He just, you know, he can bunt, but he can't hit.
I know you didn't get the Yankees broadcast, but Kenny Singleton said that Estrada is a Ronald Torres with power.
Torres had some power? Little toe?
No, he didn't.
Little toe had a little bit of power.
But no, I don't hate that comparison. I didn't hate that bat on ball with a little pop in that bat.
He's got a lot of bat on ball. He's kind of a powerhouse. I mean, he's got
thick.
He's built, man. Yeah.
THICC.
I like the fact that he came back from a bullet wound. I'm not going to lie. I think that adds character.
I think it adds street cred in that clubhouse.
Got to. Definitely adds street cred. Took a bullet, came back. I mean, that's my 25th man. Took a freaking bullet.
That's another guy, like Estrada. He's been through some shit. He's taken a bullet and still playing baseball.
You think a big moment in October is going to phase him? You think playing the Red Sox in Boston is going to phase him? He got shot.
Yeah, nothing. Game on the line. Yeah, I've been shot, boys. I got this. So a couple injury updates. What the hell is going on with Giancarlo Stanton?
Yeah, there's no update. I mean,
there is an update.
No, the update that there is no update. The update that, he's got another thing wrong with him.
Right. How do you get put on the IL back on April 1st for a bicep strain, and then we don't hear anything for a couple weeks, then all of a sudden out of the blue you got a shoulder issue, and then you're finally worked through that and you go to start rehab games, you get hit in the knee during live batting practice, and somehow that causes a calf strain, calf tightness? How does getting hit in the knee with a pitch cause calf tightness?
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of things that are connected in the leg, so it could have stemmed from that.
It could be lying and just saying it's calf tightness, and it could be a knee issue, but...
Dude, I don't know. I don't know what is going on with this, but there's something fishy.
Yes.
There's something fishy happening because of the...
Fishy.
By the way that he is, you know, Karen Veenstra wrote an article about this a couple of weeks ago too. Before actually a lot of this was even coming out, she was kind of sniffing it just after that little weird press conference that he had that was kind of out of the blue as well. It's like, oh, go show your face, you know, while you're here, which was just a weird press conference. It wasn't even a press conference. It was just him taking questions. But he's been standoffish a little bit with the way he asked the guy in Tampa. I thought he was going to pummel him. That guy just, you could tell, didn't give a rat's ass either and was just going to ask dumb questions. He just didn't care. Like, you could tell he's a single A B guy. And it was just like, so he was so casual and nonchalant
single
about A-B asking
guys
him how
are
he did it.
Too, Scott.
He just did not care. But, you know, he's getting annoyed with it. Like, he's definitely frustrated, but there's something weird here. Something happening. I don't know how you could possibly be on the shelf this long and now with a third. I'm sure the leg injury now is connected to the hip I pitch.
Well, that's what they're saying. I don't know what else it could be. I don't know why they would lie. And I don't know.
When you sprain an ankle, right? When you sprain, you feel it all the way up the leg. It gets tight.
This is an impact injury. This is not a sprained ankle. This is a ball hitting you in the knee. Like,
right, which could
probably
absolutely
swelling in a knee, some soreness, maybe a bruise in the knee.
Exactly.
But
thank you.
How do you have a calf strain?
Because I'm saying the ligaments, if you hit a ligament or you connect it to something in the knee,
you know
it absolutely
noticed?
Could. You stiffness.
Talk
stiffness.
Out of your ass so stiffness. Much when it comes to medical injuries.
No, I just had these injuries, and I'm telling you what I've felt in the past. I've felt things that are connected.
Have you been hit in live batting practice in the knee before?
Not
talking about your men's league softball, your 40 and over softball league.
That's you know, that's pretty similar to Tampa batting practice.
Also,
it's batting practice. What are they coming in
at? How do you get drilled in the knee in batting practice?
Right. Who's throwing the ball?
It's weird, and I'm
and what
starting
is it,
to think.
Is it coming like 75? Is that 75?
Yeah, but it's a shorter distance. Unless this is live batting practice, so that the pitcher maybe was, I don't know, maybe the pitcher was throwing
you
from
think
regular
they would do,
distance.
You think they would put him in a position of live batting practice with a single A guy?
I mean, what do you mean single A? He's facing single A.
No, I know, rehabbing but time after time. I don't know. Just that it seems like that would be a risk. I feel like Stanton wouldn't do it.
Who knows? But I'm starting to think, like, because Stanton's just so up in the air and we don't know what's going on, like, Didi might return before him.
Oh, Didi's definitely going to return before him. There's no doubt about it.
Even though
Didi doesn't even need water when he's playing in games. Water. Doesn't even need water. He's like, oh, I don't need that water. I don't need hydration.
Forgot
I'm just going
to
play.
Drink water out there. Tampa gets hot. It gets humid in the summer. You're going to dehydrate quickly. He needed an IV because he was dehydrated, but he said he's good to go. He's fine. Everything 100%.
Dude, he's a machine. He's an absolute machine. He looks like he could. He's throwing at full range, hitting, no issues. He could literally come up here and play right now. He just doesn't have a position.
I mean, I think they could find Didi Gregorius a position. I think
I'm joking.
Stanton, there was a chance he was going to be back for his bobblehead night, and that's obviously not going to happen. He's shut down for 7 to 10 days. So now we're looking at like June 1st before he can start his rehab again.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Didi, they're talking about mid-June. I could really see Didi coming back before Stanton.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that June 1st starting another rehab is even aggressive. For what they're doing with him, I think they're gonna the way that this team is going, they're gonna continue to take their sweet ass time with him.
I mean, they're winning. It's obvious. They're still winning, so they can take their sweet ass time with him. But
it's obvious when something happens with him, when something goes wrong, then it there's a major effect. He's such a big body guy that this has always been my concern with Judge, go long term with him, because if there's something going on, some kind of an injury, I gotta believe, I'm not a 6'7" human being by any means, but when you have any kind of injury like that, you're doing different things with that big ass body, trying to get to the same place, with your hands and your arms and your waist and your everything. So I can imagine how there's different injuries that can occur when you have that much force.
And that was a criticism. I don't know if criticism is the right word on Stanton in Miami, is that he really only played one full healthy season. And he played a full season last year, but he was not fully healthy. He dealt with a hamstring injury a lot in the second half, which probably hurt his performance. And now this year he spent time on the IL. And you talk about Judge, he's also 2017, didn't miss time, but injured with the shoulder in the second half. 2018, spent time on the IL. I know it was a freak injury, got hit in the wrist. It was the DL back then. And now he's on the IL with an oblique. So two big guys have been banged up.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely the concern with them. And then it probably just takes them longer too to get back to the point where their timing is there and they're comfortable again. Because that's the other thing, like a timing with a big bodied guy like that, that shit doesn't happen overnight.
No. Yeah.
That's a lot
more
of muscle
surface,
memory
more to, surface to get, area to heal
to get back to a consistent path with your bat, a consistent, just mechanically sound baseball player. It's gotta take a lot longer.
And another injury that's actually broke a good way for the Yankees is Tanaka's not going to miss a start. He's scheduled to make his start Thursday afternoon in Baltimore. Said there's a little bit of soreness, but he's good to go.
Hey, power to Tanaka, man. I think a lot of other guys probably would have missed the start, but I think Tanaka has that bulldog mentality, the Tanaka mentality. Yeah.
Anti-UI.
He's like, it's time. It's Tanaka time.
It's Romine will probably be catching because it's a day game after a night game. So I guess we're going to have to wait and see on that personal catcher situation.
Yeah. You can't really claim it after this one.
No, I can't. I said I can't if it's going to be a day game after a night game. And then the Yankees go to Kansas City, where they will hopefully beat up on the crappy Kansas City Royals. All right, final topic before we close out this episode. So I tweeted out on Wednesday morning that the Yankees have the third best record in the American League behind the Houston Astros and the Minnesota Twins. And I said, of course, Houston's legit. They're a wagon. Definitely would be nervous about going up against Houston in a playoff series. Minnesota, on the other hand, is anyone really concerned about Minnesota? I dare you to find a Yankees fan alive who is concerned about going up against Minnesota. And believe it or not, I got involved in Twins Twitter. I didn't know Twins Twitter was a thing. Twins Twitter is alive, and it is spectacular because two people contacted me, and they were not happy with my claim on the Minnesota Twins.
So the way that the kid, I got to imagine he's like an 11-year-old kid that was arguing with you, because he was calling out the Yankees not, or they call it the Yankees buying all their players.
Like the same narrative from 2005 that's still going strong.
Yeah. So someone told him that. So his dad told him that. And then he just threw out a name because he sees, someone who's playing on the team. He said, Aaron Hicks. Right. He's the guy that you bought.
So he named four players in a tweet that said the Yankees just buy their players. And he used four players as examples. Giancarlo Stanton, which I gave him, even though the Yankees technically acquired Stanton in a trade, he's still making a lot of money. They were not able, not many teams are in a position to acquire a contract like Stanton. So I gave it to him. He said Paxton, which I said, well, that was a trade and he's in arbitration. So false. He said Cameron Maben. And I was confused. I just said, excuse me, what? What are you talking about? Cameron Maben, league minimum that they picked up off the scrap heap. And then he dropped Aaron Hicks on me as a player the Yankees buy. And see, what I think it happened.
He's thinking about the 7-year deal.
Yes. He just Googled Aaron Hicks' contract and saw that they signed him to a 7-year deal. And he's like, oh, they bought another free agent. Meanwhile, he did probably not realize we traded J.R. Murphy, That bum J.R. Murphy, who's only good for notching belts on CC Sabathia's Hall of Fame milestone career. And we got maybe a top three center fielder in baseball in Aaron Hicks for that.
Look, I got nothing against John Ryan Murphy, first of all. Let's get that straight. I don't know where this John Ryan Murphy hate's coming from, but this kid obviously had no idea what he was talking about. Literally traded the kid from his team. So, you know, Twins Twitter credibility completely out the window.
Twins Twitter fail. And people are throwing out stats like the Twins run differential is excellent. They lead the league in a lot of offensive categories.
They're hitting a lot of home runs.
Their top three in their rotation is actually pretty solid. And they're 500 against above 500 teams, just exactly like the Yankees, 500 against above 500 teams. And to that, I say, yes, yes. Even if the Twins are legit, even if they win the AL Central, I am not scared of the Minnesota Twins.
But you're not scared of Rocco Baldelli, the pride of Rhode Island?
Does that put a little bit of fear? I wish that man all the Dell's lemonade in the world. But he and the Minnesota Twins will not beat the Yankees in a playoff series.
You don't think the Rocco Baldelli era could be a little different?
No.
You're not worried about Michael Pineda spinning a 8-inning shutout game against the New York Yankees in the playoffs?
No.
You're not worried about Byron Buxton playing an entire season and actually hitting above 200, that's a batting average, and stealing, you know, 5-6 bases off us in a series and causing mayhem on the base path?
I think the Twins, all they would consider it a moral victory if they don't get swept in the playoffs by the Yankees.
Here's what I'm concerned about. Here's what I think they just need to focus on. I think this year more than any other year, and I think what 2012 was that the last time we've won the AL East. The Yankees need to win the AL East. We need to not get into the stupid wild card game. Not let one game, one game chance game happen, because that's what it is.
Twins might win their division. They've got like a 6.5 game lead over the Indians.
That's fine. I'm not worried about the Twins.
We're no longer talking about the Twins.
I'm just talking about the fact that you know, we've played them in a wild card game before, and yeah, we went down early and it was nerve wracking because Severino sucked. And all of a sudden, Didi, the miraculous recovery guy who's good at everything, bailed us out. And I don't want to do that again. I want to be in a real series, please. That's it. I want to have my guys rested. I don't want to play some bullshit game that's a play-in game. And I want to play a real series. So yeah, the Yankees need to win the AL East this year. That's got to be it.
That is indeed the goal.
That's how it starts.
Still atop the American League East. So far that plan is working out, and they're about to get some guys back and healthy, or hopefully at some point this season. But it doesn't matter because
it seems like as every time they are approaching another healthy guy, the guy, like, you know, another injury pops up.
As long as they can keep playing teams like Baltimore, they're going to keep winning. Hopefully they complete the 4-game sweep on Thursday. Go to Kansas City, take care of business before we face a real team next week at the stadium, the Red Sox, who they will be there for a 4-game series. May 31st is our event. Tickets and all that stuff will be going out soon. Scott, any last words?
Red Sox won tonight, so they're still on.
They came back then, because I think they blew that game.
It was a 13th inning, and the Rays also won, so still a 2-game lead.
Okay, thanks for the update.
You're welcome.
Are those your last words?
Those are my last words. Why did you have to ask me that?
All right. Talk to everybody on Monday.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.